as we, as a nation, honor our fallen, we are asked to stop and to remember. That is what is asked to be done. I know many people will be doing different things tomorrow, or maybe having a picnic time, whatever the case may be. But generally there is a time in the early afternoon where we as a nation just simply stop for a moment of silence. To remember. To grieve. To thank. To pay honor to those who have paid the ultimate price for our liberty and freedom and justice that we have within this country. Many of us, and I'm going to go on a limb and say all of us, love this country. And therefore, what that sacrifice has done is allowed us to continue to this day to meet in a building like this, to worship our God, to share our faith. And I've always loved this country. I've been raised in a very patriotic home. And I've had relatives who have served this country. From World War II and other conflicts that we have been a part of. And most of the time, for those who have served, they have been with or seen death. And for them, it is not the same. It's not, let's go have a picnic. It's not about a long weekend, as was mentioned earlier. In fact, for many of them, they have a very difficult time pausing to remember a friend or another soldier that died alongside them. Many of them question, why did so-and-so die and I live? And so Memorial Day can be very traumatic for people. You heard a little history lesson here just a few moments ago. The New York Times described a note given to them by a little girl who was about 10 years of age. And it was published on June 7th, 1868 in the New York Times, in which she requested an official place a garland on an unknown rebel soldier's grave. In it, she explained her father was buried in Andersonville, Georgia, and she hoped some little girl would ask somebody down there to do that for her dad. The effects of war are horrendous. Traditionally, our president or vice president lays a wreath at the tomb of the unknown soldier. It is a time of reflection. And as was stated both in our call to worship and as our time of gathering for the Lord's Supper, It is not a far stretch to go from what is being said in our country to Jesus Christ. That's just an easy way to see it. Jesus Christ came to this earth to become the Christ, to become God with us, to live a life of holiness, to live a life of obedience to his Father, now that he was created as a son, in the flesh, that is, to live a life with a purpose, He would submit to God so that through his obedience, he would give his life as a ransom for many. We think of those terms on Memorial Day. And that is exactly what Jesus did, is he gave his life as a ransom for us. But I want you to just ponder for a moment. Both of my parents are now deceased, and sometimes people go by the grave of people that they love, even if it's not a soldier of those type, that just a reflection of going by a grave to remember someone that they care about. But we have a home, a homeland where there are no graves. Ponder that for me. When we are living with God, we live with him for eternity. Heaven is described with a street of gold. Heaven is described with a home or a mansion that we talk about. Heaven is described with this river of life and the tree of life and the fruit of that tree. But there is no grave in heaven. Because there is only life for us. Eternal life. Jesus came to this earth to show us how to live. This morning I want to take a look at a passage from 1 Peter chapter 2. And I'm going to back all the way up to verse 13, and I want to put it in its context. It's a little longer reading, but I want you to put it in the context, because verse 21 is the verse that we're really going to use as our theme for today. But verse 13 says, "Be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether it be to the emperor as supreme or to governors as sent by him to punish those who do evil and praise those who do good. For this is the will of God, that by doing good, you should put to silence the ignorance of foolish people. Live as people who are now free, not using your freedom as a cover up for evil, but living as servants of God. Honor everyone. Love the brotherhood. Fear God. Honor the emperor. Servants, be subject to your masters with all respect, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the unjust. For this is a gracious thing when, mindful of God, one endures sorrow while suffering unjustly. For what credit is it if, when you have sinned, you are beaten for it and you endure? But if, when you do good and suffer for it, you endure, this is a gracious thing in the sight of God. For to this you have been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example, so that you might follow in his steps. He who committed no sin, neither was deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but continued entrusting himself to the one who judges justly. He himself bore our sin in his body on the tree, that we might die to sin and live to righteousness. By his wounds you have been healed. For you were straying like sheep, but now have returned to the shepherd and overseer of your soul." The phrase taken in 1 Peter 2:21 is that we should follow in his steps. The first book novel, a religious type novel that my parents asked me to read as a teenager was written by Charles Sheldon, and it had this particular title, In His Steps. I know there have been some movies made out of it and that type of thing, but it had a profound effect upon me, because that particular book was all about how not just why. And even though it was a novel and it told a tremendous story, it brings you back to this passage. Jesus shows us how to live. He doesn't just tell us why we should live. And whys are important. We get a lot of whys in the Bible. This is why you do what you do. But Jesus gave us an example of how. How you live that life. How you walk in those steps. And in this section that is listed here, that is given to us here, he talks about showing submission in suffering. And I will tell you that suffering and submission are two spiritual disciplines that I have never desired to practice. I have had to practice, but they are not a part of my normal practice. Well, I guess we submit in many forms and fashions. But Jesus uses, or Peter uses this example of Jesus in this command from verses 13 all the way through the following to tell us that submission or submitting to or being subject to, whether it be government, whether it be employers, masters, whether it be spouses, in relationships, Christian to Christian relationship, submission is done simply because it is an attribute of God. And I find that incredible. That God submits and suffers. And that is exactly what Jesus did. He came to this earth to submit to the Father's will, to suffer at the hands of us people, solely for the good of all humanity. God would submit and suffer, and so he would give us that as the example of how we are to do that in our daily life. Last week when we talked about following Paul's example, and we talked about different things that we should be an example for others, this week, that example of following centers in Jesus Christ. And suffering because of my faith doesn't happen overly frequent in my life. In part, and I'm not putting anybody down, in part because my faith is probably not lived fully in the view of all those around me. I live it. I'm a good person. But I truly do know people who do not have a belief in God, who are very good people. And for whatever reason they may hold, they do good to others. They are kind. They are just, as far as we talk about justice. The reason I don't suffer is probably because I am not that different than the unbeliever. And that may sound strange, but I think there's truth in this. Jesus suffered from the beginning of his ministry for those 3 years until his crucifixion because he did nothing but talk about the kingdom of God and to claim to be the Son of God. And he would go about doing what we would say is good to everybody. He would challenge those who the world set up or the Jewish people set up as religious leaders. He would spend time with people that the Jewish community would look down upon. If that is what it takes to suffer, I ask myself, do I follow in the steps of Jesus? Do I live my life so openly that I am a child of God. Not in arrogance, not in putting somebody down, but in just living my faith both with my words as well as my action. If when I do the things I do, I continuously bring Jesus into the conversation, I guarantee you, because I've had this happen in my life, there are times in which I think I'm doing right and I'm talking about Jesus, and man, the brakes get put on in that conversation. And all of a sudden it is, well, I'm a preacher, and there is this big elephant in the room silence. Because on one hand, a person doesn't want to challenge me because they at least respect my profession. But on the other hand, they absolutely disagree with it. But they're not ready to just get into a vocal debate. But that silence is often intimidating to me. And so I shut down because I want everybody to be happy and get along. Jesus didn't do that. And so he left for us an example to follow in his footsteps. When you go to Luke chapter 9, one of our theme passages for this year, in verse 23 and 24, Jesus says, "If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will save it." While this theme passage is found in Matthew and Mark as well as in Luke, the only difference in Luke is one word. It's the word daily. Luke adds this particular word in the talk that Jesus gives. The implication both in Matthew and Mark as well as stated in Luke is that this is not a one-time act. That for me to deny myself, to take up my cross, is an ongoing way of life. Denying myself. You know, we talk about surrender and we talk about following and we couch it in great stories. But denying myself and taking up my cross comes at a cost. And many of us don't like the cost. Because the cost can be in relationship. The cost can be in dollar signs. The cost can be in work. The cost can be in how I choose to spend my free time when I'm not employed by somebody. To deny myself is to center completely on Jesus Christ. To take up my cross is all about dying. That's what it's about, okay? It is about such surrender that I no longer exist. And in my human flesh, that is a passage, along with what we were just reading in 1 Peter, that sets the bar so high that I try to rationalize it to where I can bring it down to make it work for me. Jesus says, "Let me show you how. Not just tell you why. Let me show you how." Submission is not about fairness. Submission is about willingness. It's something I choose to do or not to do. Now, there may be times that there are forced submission points in my life. But the submission that Jesus speaks of is a willingness that if I am going to follow him, then I lose my life so that I can gain it. Jesus left the throne of heaven, came to earth. And in our text that Peter wrote to us, it is because he entrusted himself to the one who judges justly. Submission and suffering that tend to go hand in hand in the Christian faith are done because we entrust ourselves to a power greater than us. So I give myself over to God's judgment, which means whatever you think of me, as much as I want you to like me, whatever you think of me is inconsequential. It doesn't change, it shouldn't change how I live, how I walk, how I talk, what I do, how I decide my finances, how I build my relationships, how I treat my wife, how I treat my children, how I treat my neighbor, how I treat the person that dislikes me at work, who is always finding fault with everything I do. It's a decision. And so submission and suffering go hand in hand because I give up. I'm willing to lose my life for his sake in order that I may gain a greater life. Now, did Jesus come to give us an abundant life even in this life? Absolutely. Does that mean every saved person has an abundant life in this life? No, it doesn't. Sorry. I wish it did. Is it always the best life possible? I would go with yes. I'm going to go with yes. Because no matter what happens, and there are people, I have a friend in college, and he is over in a country in Africa, and he wanted me to come over there and my brother to come over there. And it wasn't long after a group of people who professed their faith were publicly beheaded. Now, Carrie wasn't particularly wild about me going on that particular mission trip. And you know what? My brother and I did not go. And there is a part of the reason is suffering is real for some people. It's absolutely real. And I live such a wimpy life that the thought of suffering and doing it willingly scares the mess out of me. And to think of that type of faith that says, I'm going to pick up my cross daily and follow him. I have to entrust myself first and foremost to God. Do you remember the three amigos of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, or to bed we go, or whatever the phrase is that you try to remember those names? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are known for the whole fiery furnace story in Daniel chapter 3. And in that particular story, they are not bowing down to this golden image that has been cast. And Nebuchadnezzar is furious with them for not doing it. But the Bible tells us exactly why they would not do it. I want to read to you from Daniel chapter 3. I want you to listen to this. I'm going to begin with verse 14. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, "Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now, if you are ready, when you hear the sound of the horn, the pipe, the lyre, the trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, fall down and worship the image that I have made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands? I'm going to just stop. I'm going to keep reading it. Nebuchadnezzar is so enraged. And it's not because he hasn't already had time with Daniel. He has. But Nebuchadnezzar seems to never learn his lessons very long. And when he builds this statue, and these three young men say, no, we are not going to bow down. They do it because they first entrust themselves to God. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning, from the fiery furnace. And he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego say, there is Yahweh, and then there is nobody. Nobody. And if serving God comes at a cost of my life, then even though God could save me, I am willing to die. I am willing to give up my life in order to gain the life that he has promised. Surrendering and following come at such a high cost. But if you entrust yourself to the one who judges justly, then everything you do is through that lens. Hebrews chapter 11. The Hebrew writer makes a statement beginning in verse 13. He's talked about all these people of faith, and he makes a summary before he goes into some more people of faith. He says, all these died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking about the land which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. These people, the Hebrew writer says, died in faith, not having received in this life the things promised. I love selling Christianity, and I know that sounds bad to use that word, but hear me out. I love to tell people the great news that comes from being a part of God's family, from being a child of God, of living in community of faith with people who will always have your back. That even when we disagree, we can still find a way to love one another because we focus ourselves on Jesus Christ. I don't generally start by telling someone, I need you to understand discipleship. I need you to understand that if you accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Master, then what you are doing is you are setting aside every aspect of you. And you are now going to change the way you think, the way you live, the way you act, the way you talk, and you are going to do it solely to the one you call Master, Lord, to the one who has taken over your life and you have willingly given it up for him. Discipleship requires of you to give not a tenth of your income, but to give every aspect of your money, your time, your relationship, every aspect of you belongs to him. And if you're not willing to step into that committed of a relationship, then don't get into it. Because otherwise you're just going to be playing a game. And it's going to be grace all the time, but I don't really have to give up a whole lot. I just need to be good and be happy. When I challenge that and say, wrong premise, all you have to do is deny yourself and take up your cross daily and follow Jesus Christ. There are people who say, I don't know that I want that. I want a God who saves. I want a Jesus who saves. But I still want my life to do as I want to do. People like those written by the Hebrew writer. People like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego entrusted themselves to God. And they gave up who they were. The second thing that Jesus gives us that example of, and I just want to close this out, is that Jesus knew what his mission was. He himself bore our sin in his body that we might live. That's the phrase that that Peter gives to us in 1 Peter 2. When the Hebrew people were about to face their worst affliction, or one of the worst afflictions they have had in a long time, They had a queen that had kept herself secret, or at least her religion secret. Due to the anger of a political official, Haman was able to talk the king into genocide. Kill a Jew day. We'll pick the day, go out and kill him. The queen, relatively young, by the way, Esther, seems safe in the palace. Her uncle Mordecai sends this word to her, Esther chapter 4. Esther says to her, do not think to yourself that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all the other Jews. For if you keep silent at this time, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another place. But you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Let me put it this way. Bloom where you are planted. Okay? And by the way, that phrase came from a bishop like 450 years ago. But take this for a moment. Jesus Christ came to this earth with a mission, a purpose, to save mankind from themselves, to allow us to spend eternity with God, even though we were an unholy people, that through him we could attain righteousness, his righteousness, not ours, his holiness, not ours. So I ask you, what is your purpose, your mission? Queen Esther had to face that question. What is my purpose, my mission? Mordecai said to her, how do you not know that the whole reason you became queen was for this moment in time? We are told to make the most of every opportunity. What is your mission? In simple terms, every moment in time belongs to Him. Live it for His glory. Your mission? Same as Jesus Christ. Seek and save that which is lost. Your mission is to take a look at where you have been placed by God and determine what God wants you to do where you are. Should I move and go to such and such a place? I may say yes, I may say no. But the bigger question is, what am I doing in the place where I am right now? How is God using me for His glory right now, in this relationship with these people, in this job, in this opportunity, on this day? How am I living out my mission? You see, when we start thinking differently, when we start saying, I'm going to follow the steps of Jesus, where'er they lead, it's more than just a nice little melody given to us. Jesus faced suffering and death by entrusting Himself to God. So we're going to sing a song, and I'll give you the words of the first verse. I am no longer to linger, charmed by the world's delight. Listen to the rest of it. Things that are higher, things that are nobler, these have allured my sight. I will hasten to Him, hasten glad and free. Why? Because I am resolved. I have made a decision. I am no longer going to be me. I'm going to follow in the footsteps of Jesus. If we can help you in that resolve, then won't you come as we stand and as we sing.